This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Oh, welcome to Evolutionary Sales. I'm your host, Jason McClain, and your guide in the 21st century marketplace. Last week on Evolutionary Sales, we talked about gap analysis, which is a whole set of questions which will allow you to not only distinguish yourself in the marketplace, but more importantly, provide really clear sets of evidence around how you can contribute to your client or your prospect. Just this set of questions alone can add to your value as they perceive you, in that most people have probably never asked them these questions. Most service providers have probably never asked them these questions. So study those questions, practice those questions. It's an invaluable set of tools, just that alone. And I'll say this about a lot of aspects of this system, but just that particular set of skills alone could make a huge difference in your business today and in the future. In this week's episode, we'll get into something called units of meaning and units of conviction that will allow you to create greater conviction for somebody around acquiring your product or around engaging you for your service. If somebody said, "Does he know you?" to me, I would say, "You can just tell him Jason's calling." "Well, have you talked to him before?" "You can just tell him Jason's calling." I've had to do this a few times out of tens of thousands of phone calls, and it never takes more than three times for them to suddenly act like a robot and put you through. Because I can't say it enough that evolutionary sales is really about providing a service or product that will enhance someone else's world. And your duty is to leverage them beyond their limitations so that they can have the life or the business or the relationship or whatever it is that they've always wanted or have always needed, and then delivering on that. You get them to say yes three times, and you get them to be convicted around the value that you're going to bring. They become certain. So their hopes become beliefs, or their beliefs become certainties, and their certainties become convictions. First, a little listener email. And I've mentioned this before, but I'm going to say it a little bit more strongly. If you have found value in these podcasts and you would like them to continue, I need questions from you. We've got thousands of subscribers. And so I know there's plenty of people out there who have some questions. It could be just questions about application, but it could actually be, you know, more fundamental questions. I don't imagine that, you know, thousands of you are going, "Yep, this is brilliant." And maybe some of you are, I'm sure. But some of you have questions. Some of you have disagreements. Some of you have concerns about application. Some of you need contextualization. I'm here for that, and I welcome that. And if you don't do it, then there will be a natural end to this series of podcasts because it's a system, and the system will at some point be complete. I can drill down on it, but frankly, my focus will probably be elsewhere. So if you want this to continue to be of value to you and thousands of others, email me your questions at jason@personallifemedia.com, and Personal Life Media, once again, has two L's in it. So listener Roger emails me with this question, or actually first he says this, which I'm just going to go ahead and read this testimonial. "I've heard a lot of podcasts on sales, neurolinguistic programming, hypnosis, and other topics, and yours is one of the very few that offer great content, not just promises of content for those who sign up for paid products." Well, thank you, Roger. I really appreciate that. And your question, his question is, in terms of sales and prospecting, rapport building, they're all crucial to his business, not to mention cold calls. And he has one issue with my podcast on this topic. It says, "The advice to use first names to get by gatekeepers has failed me on many occasions. It goes something like this. May I speak with Tom, please?" "May I ask who's calling?" "You can just tell him Jason's calling." "Does he know you?" And then Roger says, there's the sticking point. It could be the sticking point if you allow it to be the sticking point. In fact, if you get stuck there, you will get stuck there. And so one of the things I used to do, and that question can come in many forms, is this a sales call? In which case you want to say, you bet it is. You want to actually brag about it and take away the dynamic of them thinking that you're doing something you shouldn't be doing and you feeling embarrassed about it. Be proud of what you're doing. By being proud of it, you take away one of their primary objections. But if somebody said, "Does he know you?" to me, I would say, "You can just tell him Jason's calling." "Well, have you talked to him before?" "You can just tell him Jason's calling." I've had to do this a few times out of tens of thousands of phone calls, and it never takes more than three times for them to suddenly act like a robot and put you through. So what I would say is the reason you're getting stuck is because you don't simply repeat back to them, "You can just tell him Jason's calling," or in this case, Roger. So Roger, thanks for your question. I imagine that there were probably 100 people with the same question. And that's the way you do that. You really pretend as if they're asking you a different variation on the same question, which is, "May I ask who's calling?" They may be asking at a deeper level or a richer level. It may be more complex. And all you need to do is stay with the mindset that they are empowered to stop your phone call, but they're not qualified, which means that you need to tell them as little information as possible so you can get to the decision maker. And again, what's critical is once you get to the decision maker, you do not waste his time or her time. You immediately say, "This is a sales call. Do you have a minute?" You will garner their respect and you will demonstrate respect for their time. Great. Thanks for your question, Roger. So to re-presence are steps in the evolutionary sales process. First of all, you've done your own emotional work. And that could mean state management. It could also mean just clearing out all your limiting beliefs and all that gunk from your past and past experiences, so they don't, it doesn't color the experiences you have with your prospects and your clients in the present. You've set your own SMART goals. That is, stated in the positive, measurable, achievable, responsible, set in time. And then you've learned how to establish rapport, whether it's in person or whether it's on the phone, but you've learned those skills and you're continually honing those skills, realizing that any time that you don't get to a place where you think you should be leading a prospect or a client, it's probably a function of a lack of rapport. And it's your job to notice that and to back up and reestablish it. We've talked in detail about information gathering, SMART outcomes with your client, and values as well. And in the last episode, we got into gap analysis. After you've gotten permission and you've engaged with them to such a degree that you have permission at every step of the way, remembering that it's your job to guide them in this process, your duty, really. Because I can't say it enough that evolutionary sales is really about providing a service or product that will enhance someone else's world. And your duty is to leverage them beyond their limitations so that they can have the life or the business or the relationship or whatever it is that they've always wanted or have always needed, and then delivering on that. So what's the next piece in the puzzle? What is the next step in the process? Two things that go hand in hand, really. And in fact, on the flowchart, they're looped together. And you could even say that you should do, though, that loop. You should commit to cycling through that loop at least three times. And it's a unit of value or meaning, and then a unit of conviction. And it's really straightforward. It's a simple little language pattern where you've said, "Well, gosh, what I'd like to do for you is this. And what that means to you is this. Do you feel that would be useful?" And you get a yes, or you get a no, and then you get some feedback. And then you cycle through it again. And what else I'd like to do for you is this. And what that means for you is this. And would that be useful to you, or would that be valuable to you? And they say yes. Again, you do that three times. I just demonstrated it twice. So it could be something like, "So what I'd like to do for you is, show three homes for you. And what that means to you is I'll be showing you three homes that fit your values. Would that be useful to you, or would that be valuable?" And you get them to say yes. "Or what I'm going to do for you is I'm going to design this training, and it's going to incorporate all the things that we've talked about that are lacking in your sales department currently. And what that means for you is you'll get an experience in your department that should ramp up your sales at a pace that's astounding to you. Would that be useful to you?" And you just keep cycling through that. You do it at least three times. Now, what I'll say about this step is it's unnecessary, but man, is it useful. It's useful because, first of all, you get to gather feedback in a way that's really, there's nothing at stake. You're still in the information gathering process, literally. And it could be that you've gone away and you've designed an offering, and then you're coming back. Or it could be that you're just on the spot and you get to do this. It depends on your business, of course. And I'll rely on your questions in terms of how to apply this to your particular business through email or on the blog to really assist you in integrating this. But what it means for you is if you're able to take someone through this process, this little loop of units of value and meaning, so they understand how it's going to be valuable to them, what it's going to mean for them in terms of what you're delivering, more concrete, less abstract, and then get them to essentially say, yes, that will be valuable to me based on my outcomes. You get them to say yes three times, and you get them to be convicted around the value that you're going to bring. They become certain. So their hopes become beliefs, or their beliefs become certainties, and their certainties become convictions. And they pretty much, the next step is that it becomes truth for them that the service that you're going to provide is incredibly valuable because they've said essentially yes to it three times. They become convinced. The worst that could possibly happen is you'll get some feedback. They'll say, well, you know, I'm not sure that's valuable. I'm not sure that's what I want. And then you just adjust. You just adjust so that you can provide them with the best service possible, the best experience possible, and the greatest results possible. Now, this may take some practice. Some of it is about contextualizing your offering into importing it into their outcomes. Some of it is about making sure that you create a compelling offer that you can also absolutely deliver on. And part of it is about being facile enough with your internal experience where the language comes easily. And regardless of what they're saying, you have the ability to respond and not react. And that all goes back to that personal work. So again, we've just given you the next piece in the puzzle in the evolutionary sales process. The difference that will make the difference for you in the 21st century marketplace. We've added to personal work, and then the next step is rapport. And the next is information gathering, which is smart outcomes, gap analysis, values, all of those things. Getting permission, permissive selling. Gathering interest by making an incredibly compelling offer. And then tying your offer in your value proposition with a unit of value or meaning and a unit of conviction. In the next episode, we'll get to one of the most important parts in this process. Not that any one of them are disposable, although we could say this last one, while the most disposable, is still really important. But the next step in the process, the next piece in the puzzle in the evolutionary sales process, is how to build vision and possibility. Because here's the truth of it. People don't buy a product or service. Nobody buys a product or service. People buy what they think will create possibility for them, or they buy a result. And so one of the things we want to do is get away from focusing on the money and what specifically you're going to do. While those are important things that cannot be discarded, what we really need to focus on is building vision and possibility. What will it create for them in their business, their life, their relationship, etc., if they have your product or service? What will it make possible? And we'll talk about those language patterns in the next episode of Evolutionary Sales. I'm your host, Jason McClain, and your guide in the 21st century marketplace. For transcripts of this show or other shows on the Personal Life Media Network, please visit personallifemedia.com. And there's two L's in personallifemedia.com. If you have any questions about application or about contextualization or about specific industries that you would like me to assist you in applying these techniques or distinctions, please email me at jason@personallifemedia.com. And again, there's two L's in personallifemedia.com. And the best questions, of course, I will use in the episodes, and you'll get a free cover for your iPod from ifrogs.com. That's ifrogz.com. And Roger, who provided the question for us in this episode, has one on the way. Thanks for listening. Thanks for allowing me to contribute to you.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.